attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law with attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
There's the longest running continual show in Florida, as far as I know. And if you, it was probably thousands and thousands of questions. I have to figure out how many questions I've answered on the air, but it'd be maybe 100,000. I don't know. It's a lot of questions. We're on multiple stations all over Florida. I do multiple shows. You're watching one right now, and you can call us at 877, toll free, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Your questions can be just about any area of law. They can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, healthcare surrogates. Can be about personal injury. It can be about family law. It can be just about any area of law that you might have a question. And at minimum, I think I can get you pointed in the right direction. A lot of times, your question's right in my practice area of things I've been personally involved in, and I'm more than glad to help you. That's what we're here for. Again, so you're listening on multiple stations around Florida. You're listening on 570, 910, 860, 930. You know, they're coming out of the Salem broadcast studio in Tampa, Florida. That's where I'm broadcasting from today, is in Tampa. You might be listening on 90.3 FM out of Central Florida. WLVF, Landmark's Voice of Faith, a station owned by the Landmark Baptist Church, and they have a Bible college and a radio station. You might be listening in Sun City Center, community station, 96.3. You might be listening in Jacksonville, where we have offices also, and that would be WBOB. AM and 101.1 FM on your radio dial. No matter where you're listening, you have a toll-free number you can call the show. And that is 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open right now. Always like that first caller coming in to kind of get things started and see how many people we can help today. One of the areas of practice of our firm, of course, is estate planning. And a lot of our calls are about estate planning. Not all. We have real estate questions, family law questions, personal injury questions, consumer law questions. We have multiple questions like that. But a lot of it is on estate planning. So the questions, one of the questions I got this week that is a recurring question is, how often should I have my estate planning documents updated or reviewed? So one of my clients asked me that as they were signing a brand new will and trust documents, how often? And they were worried about whether or not, if you have a living trust, whether or not your trust document has to be changed every time you add or delete assets from it. Now, I've had that question a lot, actually, so let me answer that. Your trust document does not change when you add or take assets out of the trust. I think of the trust as a bucket. So you create a bucket, you put assets in your bucket, just by a name change. You take assets out of your bucket, and you could do that the rest of your life multiple times, so the document's not going to change. The most common changes to a trust or a will, or who the successor trustees are, or who the personal representatives are, or what the distribution scheme that you have is, those are the things that change, and those are the things that would warrant a change in the document. And a trust is no harder to change than a will. With a trust, it's just called an amendment. With a will, it's just called a codicil. Let's go to our first caller, Marie, calling. Hey, Marie.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for taking my call. By the way, I saw you on Arthur Lee Rippey's show the other day.
Well, thank you so much. That was sent that to all of our people on our email list yesterday also. So thank you so much for mentioning that.
Yeah. I have a question about my mom has a trust, and she's 103 now. She has specified in that trust that she wants whatever's left when she's gone to go to her siblings, not her siblings, her children.
Mm-hmm.
There are four of us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My brother and I are the administrators of
mm-hmm.
that trust.
Okay.
She's gone. I have a sister who has given up her life almost. She came here she quit her job in Jacksonville, came here, and she's almost 24/7 looking after Mom. And we kids have discussed the fact that she needs to get more than the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is Mom still competent to make legal decisions?
I don't know. Some days she is, and some days she isn't. She might be in the moment, but then tomorrow she'll forget that she told you that. But anyway, I mean,
one thing y'all could do is just receive your inheritance, and then make gifts to your sister. You can give away $15,000 per year, each of you per person. So if you're married, for example, you could give her $30,000. 15 from you, 15 from your husband, without having to report anything to the government. If mother's having a good day and she's competent, mother could change the document just to, you know, leave her half and the other half to be split to the three of you or you know, whatever percentage she would like.
Uh-huh. But there's no way my brother and I, as administrators, should just go ahead at her passing and give my sister a third. What we figured was to give her a third,
mm-hmm.
and the other two thirds would be divided among the other three of us. Is there any repercussions legally if we should do it that way?
Well, if you're going to do something, you can't change mother's document, but the beneficiaries can all have a beneficiary agreement that.
Uh-huh.
You all agree on this distribution, because you need to get you don't have the power to change her document to do what you want to do, but on the other hand, the only ones to object are the beneficiaries. So sometimes what we would do is just get a beneficiary agreement, draw up kind of a distribution plan, get everybody to agree to do it. Then you'd have the legal authority to do what you've all agreed to.
Would that be before or after she passes that we should do that?
I think it could be either way.
Okay.
The best deal would be if mother was competent,
mm-hmm.
and just slightly competent, perhaps, to
mm-hmm.
change her document. Because, again, at the end of the day, the only ones to complain about whether she was competent or not would be the children.
Right.
So if you all are in an agreement and mother could focus, I mean, did I do your mother's trust? Or did she live out of town?
No, you didn't do it, and the attorney that did it he's retired.
Okay, well, it doesn't really matter. So let's, and she lives in Haines City or Winter Haven?
No, actually, she lives in Lakeland.
Lakeland, okay, so we have an office in Lakeland as well. But actually, if mother was before me, and for, you know, 1 or 2 minutes, she could focus on the question and answer it, that this is what she wants on her distribution. Then, since she would probably pass the test of whether I thought she was competent or not, if she can focus and answer a question, we could do the document. And even the only ones to object to whatever she would tell me would be the children. So if nobody objects, you don't have a problem, then the trustees just follow the document.
The only problem was you getting in front of Mama is that she's bedbound.
I see.
Can't get out of the house.
We have
24/7 care. We have 24/7 care.
Yeah, well, we make house calls, you know, some. So maybe maybe that could work.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open at 877 877- 843-9673. And let's go to Jim in Sarasota.
Hi, this is Jim.
Hey, Jim.
I'm involved in a 5-year nasty trust case, and I just wanted to let people know that I don't have standing, but I'm a senior relative, and my daughter was the trustee, but she was wrangled out of half of the trust by another cousin, and of course I'm trying to get standing. And in some states, you can get standing if you're the oldest oldest relative. And
now, what's your definition of standing?
Well, so that you can be involved in the...
So you can be an interested party in the case?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Were you originally a named beneficiary?
No, I was not. That was the problem, but that was one of the points I was going to try to make. It, you can get standing in some states.
Well, you can contest
if you're the oldest relative.
Yeah, but I don't think that applies to Florida.
No, I don't. I don't think it does either. But some states you can.
Well, let's back up a second, though. But if you have a valid reason to contest the document. And the most common reasons people contest documents are incompetence or... Or undue influence.
That applies in both cases.
Okay, so if you could prove either one of those, then you are in the natural line of things to be a beneficiary, then you would have cause, perhaps, to get an attorney to contest the document.
Yeah, it's...
But let's say, for example, though, if the document was declared void... Would you be in line as a beneficiary?
No, not necessarily. Yeah. My daughter would be. She's the trustee.
Well, then, okay. So then, I don't think you would ever have standing, as you call it, because even if the document was null and void, you wouldn't be a beneficiary. So, why would the court grant you any consideration?
Well, because of the incapacity and the undue influence.
Yeah, but that would be up to a beneficiary that would benefit from it, actually, to bring the case.
Well, my daughter has already brought the case.
Okay, well, your daughter would be the one to...
But she lost.
Oh. But your daughter would be the one to have standing, as you call it.
Yes, that's true, but I'm trying to make up a case for my standing, being the oldest relative.
Well, I don't know the laws in whatever state you're talking about, but that would not work in Florida.
Yeah, well, it does in some states. That's the point I was trying to make.
All right. Well, thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. Hey, do you have a legal question? Do you have a comment like Jim there? Do you want to contribute or try to contribute something to the show? Or just ask a legal question is a big contribution, I think. Because hopefully I can help you, and hopefully I can help other people that are listening. We have a toll-free line. You can ask me any legal question or any question concerning a problem. And you can do that by calling the toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. If you'd like to learn more about the law firm, we have a 100-page website with lots of information on it as well. And that is at www.attypip.com. attypip.com. And if you would like to call our toll-free office number now, that's 1-800-226-3529. Let's go to Anita calling from St. Petersburg.
Good morning, Mr. Pippin.
Good morning.
I live in St. Petersburg, and last year I went down at Christmas time to see the usual manger display there of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about a half mile away from where it usually is in the center of Straw Park downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And no one would even know it was there. I found it by accident walking back to my car. I looked through the park, and there were a few idols, and there was a tribute to Kwanzaa, but no religious display at all. I wrote the city council at that time, all nine members of them, and complained about it and received no response. So I'm wondering, do you have any legal advice you can give me as to what action I take now?
Well, if you contact me, I know of a law firm that specializes in dealing with those type of cases.
Oh, great.
And I can gladly put you in touch with them, and they can look at the situation and discuss whatever rights you have or whatever, the group rights would be to do something like that. And I'd be more than happy to share that with you. That's just about all they do, and I think they pretty much do it on a volunteer basis.
Wow.
So if you want to email me, I will dig up that name and get it to you, and then you can report back to us on how everything worked if you like. But if you want to email me, it's Joe, J-O-E.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on.
All right.
J-O-E
at attypip.com. So it's Joe at attypip.com.
Okay. Thank you so very much. I'll do exactly that.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney. That's me, Attorney Joe Pippin, all about Florida law. If you have a legal question of any type, hey, I'm here to help you this Saturday morning. And actually, I have done this for 34 years, continually running. And yes, I would rather be doing this than playing golf or fishing. So I'm here to help as many people as I can at 877-943-9673. I did play golf for a while. And I would kind of say I got addicted to golf because I want to be good at it. And to be good at it, you have to practice a lot. And I have played courses like Pebble Beach and Kapalua and Torrey Pines and Pinehurst. And I have played some very nice courses. And I got good enough to have two hole-in-ones, actually. But then along the way, I haven't played golf for like 2 years now. I keep telling myself I'm going to get back to it. But I just kind of got tired of playing golf. It takes a long, long time. I used to like to go after work and play nine holes by myself once in a while, and just as a way to practice, more or less. But to go do that on 5 or 6 hours on a Saturday or Sunday just got kind of old, and I kind of got out of that. So not sure if I'm going to get back into it or not. Let's go to David in Jacksonville.
Hello. Hey, how you doing? Good morning.
I'm doing great. And you?
Good, good. I have a question. It involves guardianship and SSI payments.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently got guardianship of my wife. She is bipolar, and she stopped taking her medications. And I found out that she was getting SSI payments, which apparently she should not have gotten. And I'm wondering, I would assume that she's liable for paying back SSI those payments.
Well, yeah, if they can prove that she should not have gotten them and it was a mistake, they'll find a way to try to come get it. Does your wife have separate assets within the guardianship court?
No, she has nothing. She's been that way since we were married, but she was on her medicine and she just decided she was going off it. That's why I became a guardian. I basically have been working, and so I've been supporting her all my life.
Mm-hmm.
She would have half the house, I would guess. Here in Florida.
Well, you didn't know she was receiving the SSI payments?
No. She would not let me get involved with any of her finances.
All right, well, then I don't think they can come after you personally to recapture the money. And I don't think, they can't come. And if she doesn't have money, I think they don't have any way to get the money back then. I don't think you're personally liable.
Okay, because I was wondering if they would come after that. I do have a 401k from work.
Well, that would be coming after you, and I think if you tell the same story you just told me, that you didn't know that she was receiving the money or what she did with it, and that didn't happen before you started the guardianship, though, right? And just after she started the guardianship.
Yeah, I looked into, because the court was asking for papers, so I started looking into what she was receiving.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a regular Social Security payment. Then I found out part of it was an SSI payment. So I did go down to Social Security and talk to the gentleman.
And what did they say?
He told me he was going to go back, say that she should have been receiving it for 2 years, He put it in the system. This was back in December.
Mm-hmm.
He said I should receive a letter from them in January or February. I have not heard from mm-hmm. them. They're still depositing the money into the account.
The same amount.
I was going to go. Yeah. What they were supposed to have done is move the deposits into a guardianship account and not put it in the old account where mm-hmm. it's strictly under her name. They haven't done anything with it. So I would have to go back down to Social Security.
Yeah, you need to do that because I'd be concerned about the same amount of money that once you got knowledge of it.
I'm responsible, I would say, yeah.
Well, you would be responsible with her money. Then it's a question of what you did with the money you did receive. I don't know. I'd be a little bit worried about some liability there. So I'd definitely go back down and get it fixed.
Okay. All righty. Definitely. No, I've held on to the money. I haven't touched that.
Okay, that's good.
I was waiting for Social Security to send this letter.
Yeah.
It's been 6 months, and... So I'll just head down there and talk to the same gentleman who said he put in a request to stop the payments.
Yep, that's what I would do.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Fred in Sun City Center.
Good morning.
Hey, Fred.
Howdy. Last week, someone inquired about if they held a medical marijuana card. There was a question, I guess, in reference to firearms, mm-hmm. and you said you're going to have to look into it. I wonder if you've had a chance to look into that.
You know, I didn't research it, but I had a conversation with someone who had a concealed weapons permit, or they were thinking about getting a medical marijuana card, and they told me, now this is unofficial, more or less, that if
yes.
If they got a medical marijuana card, they would have to forfeit their concealed weapons permit.
Okay,
but you know, to be honest with you, I didn't. I just had a conversation with a person that told me that, and then I didn't get around to looking it up for sure. So well, let's do this. Let's offer, if anybody out there in the audience knows for sure what that answer is, they can call, and I promise you by next week I'll research it myself and have an answer for you.
And have it on the air?
Yes, sir.
All right, I would listen to you religiously and always appreciate what you're doing. So imagine that question in reverse. If you have a medical marijuana card, you would not be eligible for a weapons permit.
That's what I was told, but again, I haven't officially researched it yet. But, yeah, that makes sense, right? If you have to give it up, you're not going to get one. So.
Correct.
All right.
Thank you again for what you do.
All right, Fred. Thank you.
Right. Bye.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. If you have a legal question, you have about halfway through the show now. So we have half of the show left for you to call 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open, and we're here to help as many people as we possibly can. If your group needs a speaker, I do speaking engagements all the time. Pastor of a church just came in this past week to do some documents for the mother, and we got to talking, and they almost immediately sent me an invitation to speak at a church the upcoming in about a month or so, I guess. On a Wednesday night. So I'll come in and do the Wednesday night portion of the service and talk about some legal issues from a Christian's perspective. A lot of times I talk about just being a good steward and how that works in the estate plan and answer questions from the audience. And I've done this numerous times in multiple churches all over the place. So I'd be more than glad to do that. If you have another type of group, if you have an AARP group that meets monthly, I've spoken many times to the Federal Retired Employment Groups. I've spoken many times in mobile home parks where they have a big community activities building and they have coffee meetings every once a week or so. And if you need a speaker, there's no fee for that. I'd love to come to your group. And there's a toll-free office number for you to call to make those arrangements. And the toll-free office number is 1-800-226-3663. 3529. And if you would like to receive our free estate planning poster sheet that we give out every week as well, we give those out at the seminars too, by the way. But if you'd like one yourself, you can call our toll-free office number and just request it at 1-800-226-3529. Hey, and Fred, if you have, if you're still listening and you have access to email, you can send me an email. You can email me your question, and then I'll have it sitting right there looking at me, so I'll definitely probably look it up right then and get and shoot the answer back to you. So, Fred, if you want to email me about if you have a medical marijuana card, if you have to give up your concealed weapons permit, the email address is just joe@attypip.com. Let's go to John in Ocala.
Yes, sir.
Hey, John.
How are you?
Good.
Okay, my question is regarding a situation real quick. I was hospitalized with a traumatic brain injury last year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't have much money. I have only a Social Security existence, okay? I'm 77. What happened? The hospital was paid, but I could not pay all the doctors involved.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm getting feedback from notices and two collection agencies that if they go to my bank, they can put a levy or garnishment on my one and only account, which is Social Security. Mm-hmm. It's only $1,100 approximately a month, and $1,000 of that it keeps me alive.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very nervous about the people being able to do that to this Social Security direct deposit account. So what the situation is, I had a friend of mine get on the computer. They discovered some rule, Social Security Regulation number 79-4, which states that that account cannot be levied.
Yeah, it's also under Florida Statute 222 that that's a protected account. There's your Social Security money.
Yeah. So I've been sitting on the edge of my chair every day wondering when I'm going to get a notice.
Well, if you do, you can just object to it. I think that money would still be protected.
Oh, that sounds good. What was the Florida statute?
It's Florida. It's within Florida Statute 222.
Okay.
That's that's the asset protection statute, basically.
Okay, because, like I say, it's my only account for existence, and that would be a horrible situation.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you for your advice.
All right, well, I gave you some peace of mind for the weekend, so that's what we're here for. All right, John, thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
Let's go to Anthony in Tampa.
Yes, good morning, Joe. Thank you for being available to assist. I've been listening to your show for quite a number of years, and unfortunately I put this off for too long, but I need your assistance in obtaining power of attorney over two adults, family members. How do I go about doing that, and do you offer that assistance?
Oh, sure. Be glad to help. The two family members that would need the power of attorney are competent, correct?
Well, no. One, my mother's up in age. She's still competent, but I need to have that
okay.
ability to handle her situation. The other, my older brother is a paranoid schizophrenic, retired, disabled veteran, and he, when he's off his medications, he spirals out of control. So I need to obtain that because not too much for Baker acting, but when I admit him to a facility for assistance, we're fearful that they might take over his custody of him, and we're kind of fearful if I don't obtain that power of authority, that it might happen. So how can I go by avoiding that?
All right, well, they have to just have a minimal level of competence to be able to focus in, you know, if I were preparing the document, I would, you know, have to make sure they were competent and understood what they were signing. And usually,
so they don't have to be present then.
Yes, they have. No, they have to sign it in front of an attorney, basically.
Right. See, that's as far as in case of my mother, that would be fine. But I would have to get my brother up to date on his medication for him to be sort of coherent, I guess, with the word to be able to understand what he's signing.
Well, there are two ways to get control in your situation. They either give you a power of attorney, or otherwise, if they're a danger to themselves, they would have to be declared incompetent and take a procedure through the guardianship court.
Okay, and if that happens, what control can they actually take them out of our?
Declares him incompetent, then you've lost control. Unless you yourself get appointed the guardian.
Well, how can I go about doing that, getting appointed? Would that take a different route than obtaining power of attorney?
A power of attorney would be your best, easiest, least expensive route.
Okay.
If you have to go through the guardianship proceeding, that's a long, drawn-out court proceeding that's expensive as well.
Okay. Being that I'm his younger brother, and I've handled this, speaking for him, whenever I've had to go to the hospital or a psychiatrist's office, do I have any authority or power as far as speaking on his behalf, or is that?
I'm sure the court could easily consider you the best person to be his guardian. But again, the easiest way to do this is to get him, on the right track here himself, and then just get him to give you a power of attorney.
Okay, and then if I go that route, how can I get that assistance through your office?
Yes.
Okay. Sure.
You can bring him to my office, and if he's having a good day and is agreeable to everything, we could get a power of attorney done in one visit for him.
Okay. Now, can that be done on separate, for example, one day my mother can travel there, and then my brother, they have to be both of them at the same time?
No. It could certainly be separate.
Okay, and you have an office here in Tampa?
Yes, we do.
Okay, can I get a phone number? I can contact them and kind of
work these
out.
Well, all of our phones ring into one place, so just use the 800 number,
1-800-226-3529. Okay, fantastic. Listen, I appreciate you helping me out. Again, I've listened to your show for years, and I need assistance, and it's always great and a blessing to have you available.
Well, thank you so much, Anthony.
Thank you, Joe.
All right, glad to help. You're listening to Ask an Attorney, All About Florida Law. That's me, Attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, we have, 17 minutes left in the show, and we'd be more than glad to help you. All you have to do is to dial the toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open right now. We'd be more than glad to help you if we possibly can. We're broadcasting live today on WeBeam TV. We do that every other Saturday on WeBeamTV.com. Actually, we're also broadcasting live on Instagram and Facebook. So if you find me on Facebook. You can find the Law Offices of Joseph Pippin, Ask an Attorney, or just Joseph Pippin on Facebook. And you can watch us there. You can watch us on Instagram, Joseph Pippin. So if you want to watch a little bit and see a little video of the show while we're doing it, that's the way to do that. And if you'd like to call the show again, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. And let's go to Janet in Jacksonville.
Good morning, Joe.
Hey, Janet.
Hi. I have a question, and maybe you direct me somewhere else, or maybe you can help me. It concerns my husband and I are federal contractors. We actually have mail routes, and that just means we deliver mail like a regular mail carrier, but we're contract labor, not employees, which you probably know that, but just for your audience's purposes. We are having great difficulty with the postmaster in a particular office, and she's been hostile, harassing, bullying, degrading, demeaning, treating us horrifically. I know there has to be some sort of statutes. I've already talked with Department of Labor, OSHA, EEOC. The problem is we're contract labor. So as not an employee, I'm having difficulty finding the route with which we alert someone to her behavior, possibly get it changed, or maybe get her removed.
Well, is there a postmaster general in charge that you...
Like in D.C.? That would probably be like D.C. We, as contract labor, report to an office in Colorado, like 6,000.
Yeah, but if you're still not being treated correctly or properly, I think the postmaster general, I mean, I haven't looked at a leadership type of management structure of who's in charge of what, but I'm thinking there, if there's a postmaster general, just start with the top.
I hadn't actually thought of starting at the top.
Yeah.
I thought there might be like something local or just federal statutes that say, hey, you know, we cannot behave like that in a federal workplace, regardless of if you're behaving that way towards an employee or a contractor.
Yeah, and you could also deal with an attorney. If you want to email me, I'll tell you show you a way to find an attorney that might practice in government law, more or less. There are multiple little tags we could probably figure out on how to find an attorney in that area that would practice that type of law.
Okay, and possibly shoot something up to the Postmaster General, start in D.C. kind of thing, and let it work its way down, maybe?
Yes, and your local congressperson or senator might be somebody to notify.
We've actually gone that route already, and it gets turned around. They think what we're talking about is like a discrimination based on, you know, sex, color, race, blah, blah. They think it's something like that, and it's not. It's just a behavioral procedures, practices, SOP kind of stuff.
Do you know who this person directly reports to?
I do not, and I would like that. I know the area, the region.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if I can call up there and say, hey, who is her boss? You know, it's a little funny going above somebody.
Well, no, that's what you got to do, though. I mean, you're stymied at the level you are, so you got to go to the next level. And sometimes you just go to the top and say, look, I'm just stymied. I can't find out information. They won't even tell me who she works for. And this is what's happening, and just kind of outline it in on paper.
Okay. You do have that, of course, fear of the kind of whistleblowing thing, but we're not alone in this. There's about 60 of us in the office, and there's just no one watching her. She's just free to behave however she wants, and it's atrocious.
It'd be pretty powerful if you could get 60 people to sign a paragraph or two about her, the way she treats everybody.
It's really difficult to get anyone to do that. Everyone is pretty much in fear of their job. No one really wants to say anything. They just keep their head low and try and get out the door as quick as they can.
Wow. Well, it's a shame you have to work in that environment, for sure.
I'm working my way out, but my husband's not out yet, so I'm just trying to get a little relief for him until we can work him out as well. But I appreciate your suggestions. I think I will try and figure out who her boss is and possibly shoot something to D.C. as well.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Joe.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. Let's go to Mary in Clearwater.
Good morning, Joe, and thank you for what you do with this program in the morning. My question is, can you have both a revocable and an irrevocable trust at the same time?
Yes. Yeah, you can have as many trusts as you want. Why would you want... You want a revocable trust that you can fully control, and you want to get assets out of your name in an irrevocable trust for whatever reason. But, yes, you could do that.
Okay. And so setting up the irrevocable trust is something that's better to do in that situation, hopefully before a five-year look-back period for a Medicaid.
Yeah, I have people that would create two trusts, one for ones they want to have full access to and ones they would like to not be reachable 5 years from now because of the look-back period for Medicaid purposes. So, yes. We used to do, a lot of clients used to have two trusts back when the tax exemption was $600,000 or $1 million, and they had more than that. They would create an irrevocable life insurance trust, basically, to get money out of their estate that wouldn't be taxed. Now the exemption is 11.4, so we don't have too many clients do that for that purpose anymore. But we are starting to have clients that want to protect a certain level of assets, and they throw them into an irrevocable trust just to get past the five-year look-back period on Medicaid. So, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you again so much.
All right. Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Frank in St. Petersburg.
Okay. Hey, Joe. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And you?
Terrific. Thank you. A real estate question. When you put down a good faith deposit on when you buy a condo or a house, how many days do you have where you can back out of that?
Well, basically, you might not have any days. You can build in language within a contract. The four corners of the contract pretty much control. So you can build in whatever offer you want, saying, you know, that you could get your money back after an inspection. You could
right.
get your money back after 10. You have to build a language into the contract, though, to be able to get the money back usually.
Oh, okay. So I thought maybe it was a standard thing in real estate law in Florida.
No,
you know, where it would be
some special provisions on certain, like, timeshares. There, on some real estate contracts, there are amount of time where you can get your money back.
Okay.
But to be safe, if it's not automatically in the contract, you know, that you don't see it in writing like you do on timeshares, for example, you can add in
right.
whatever. You have so many days to revoke the offer and get the money back, and you, during that time you could have inspections and so forth.
Right, yeah. Another question. Let's say two people, unmarried people, are getting buying a house or a condo. Is it better to put that in a revocable trust? Does it make things easier, you know, when you want to leave everything to the other person?
Well,
you know,
if you could have a joint trust, or you could have individual ownership tenants in common with giving each other a life estate. I mean, there are multiple ways to do that. If you're going to own it separately and you're not married, perhaps you could each own one half and have your one half in your own trust and have the provisions in that trust leave it to the other party without probate. And then,
right.
if some reason the relationship doesn't work out, you still own half, and it's not all commingled as a joint asset.
Right, right.
If you get married and you want the survivor to own it, I'd say, you know, own it joint with right of survivorship in its entirety, which would all go to the surviving spouse. But if you're not going to get married, I would definitely probably own it tenants in common and just be able to control your one half at all times.
Right. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Joe. I appreciate it.
All right, no problem. Thanks for calling.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Let's go to Don in Kissimmee.
Hello.
Hey, Don.
Yeah, how you doing? Okay. Listen, my wife's mother has a home. She doesn't want to do a will because she's superstitious. If she does one, she'll pass away earlier. What happens to the home if she passes away without a will?
Well, if she passes away without a will, so she is not married, correct?
No.
And how many children does she have?
She has two.
Two. So the house without a will would go to the two children through a statutory probate proceeding?
Uh-huh.
So you probably get the same result. If she wanted to leave everything equally to her children, if she didn't want to leave everything equally to her children, then she definitely needs to do a document. The statutory without a will proceeding, we charge a little bit more for through a probate proceeding than we would if she had a will, for example.
Yeah.
And, of course, she could do a living trust to avoid the probate process if she wanted to.
Right. Now, can she do a will on video? Can she do a video will?
A video will by itself is not a valid will.
Okay.
Needs to be in writing. It needs to be witnessed by two people. And if you want to make it self-proving, it needs to be notarized.
Got you. All right. Thank you. I appreciate your help.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to Ask an Attorney all about Florida law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. We only have about 5 or 6 minutes left in the show. And if you want to call, you could maybe be our last caller today. Phone lines are open right now at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. If you'd like to receive our free estate planning poster sheet, it's a large double-sided sheet. On one side, it has like 5 or 6 articles about estate planning. Kind of gives you the different options in estate planning. It has little diagrams explaining things, charts. It's a great educational piece for you just to have and to read. Even if you think you have your estate planning all done, this might give you some reminders about different things that would benefit you. On the other side of the sheet, we have all of our office locations, phone numbers. We have the website, radio show information. Would love to mail this to you. It's a large double-sided sheet. You can view it on our website. But I think it'd be much better if you had it in your hand. So you can get it one of three ways. You can call our toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. You can email me your name and address at Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. You can, again, call our toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529. All right, let's go to Aaron in Clearwater.
Thank you very much for taking my call. And I love what you do.
Thank you.
I have a letter from a company that wants a power of attorney in order to recover $300 worth of money that's left in a fund with the state based on a condominium I used to own.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants a power of attorney, a limited power of attorney, in order to get that money and take a reasonable commission to do it.
Well, what's a reasonable commission on $300?
I think it's $45 or $55.
Have you checked the person out online to see if there are any complaints or scams?
I don't go online.
I see. Well, I do know there are detective agencies, and there are people who find lost funds, and some of those are valid. I would probably say most of them are okay, but there are a few that are just trying to get your money, and it might be something you could do yourself. You don't go online, though. Do you have any family members that go online?
Friends to go online.
Does he want the $45 up front?
No, he just says that he'll send me the difference.
Yeah. Well, do you have family members who can go online and just check the person out? I think if somebody can check him out and he seems legit for that little bit of money and the little bit of cost, it might be okay. You just want to make sure you're dealing with a person that's not going to take advantage of you.
Yeah, I'm reluctant to give a limited power attorney to any stranger.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other question,
yeah.
I have a second question related to this, mm-hmm. and is it possible that there's more funds there, that when I get this $300, I give up the right to get the actual, a bigger amount that might be due?
Yeah, you know, you could probably call an attorney and get them to check online to the lost funds to the state of Florida has a lost fund account, and see how much money is there for you. We do that for clients all the time, actually. So if you're not trying to solicit your business, but we could, for free, we could look online and see what there is to get. Hey, I've got music in my ears, so it means I got 30 seconds to go, but thanks for calling, Aaron. I hope I helped you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. We're here every week during this time period. Glad to be here. Glad to help as many people as I can. And you have a wonderful weekend. So long.